Hi, Kevin Murphy here. You're listening to Conversations with Kevin, a show about innovation, creativity, product, and purpose. It contains all the ingredients that make up what Kevin Murphy is and what we stand for. So I'm Kevin Murphy, and this is Conversations with Kevin.
Welcome to Conversations with Kevin. I'm Headmaster Nathan Gorman, and today we have a very special edition of Conversations. Internationally renowned hairstylist and Kevin Murphy guest artist Mary Ann Jensen, or MJ as some call her, has become one of the most influential stylists in the beauty and fashion industry. She's a native of Denmark. She has over 30 years expertise, and her passion for hairstyling has made her one of the most talented and respected artists. She's received many, many awards like Elle Style Hairdresser of the Year. She's very accomplished. She's a good friend of mine, works very strongly in the Danish international fashion industry as well, and is a very, very big part of the Kevin Murphy family. Welcome, Mary Ann, to Conversations with Kevin. That's quite a legacy, and you're here. How are you?
I'm very overwhelmed by that beautiful presentation. Thank you, Nathan, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh.
And it's lovely to hear your voice again. It's so long ago.
I know. I can't wait. Mary Ann, those that know you and know me, we don't know where this will go, so this is wonderful. So I know you're from a small island in the south of Denmark. So what is a small island in the south of Denmark like for our listeners?
Yeah, for an Australian, I think it will be pretty small. I'm from a place called Ærø. It's pretty difficult for you to pronounce because you don't know the letters. But it's 27 kilometers long and 3 kilometers wide. And there live 6,000 people there. And from this little village where I'm from, it's like 2,000. So it's pretty small. But when I had to study hairdressing, I moved to another island that was a little bigger because there's no education there. So you move from home. I moved from home when I was about 16, actually.
Mm.
And then...
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Common thread in hairdressing, isn't it, to leave home early? Now, you started your hairdressing career on another island. So who did you start working for? What was that like?
I took my education in a little kind of like a small hairdressing shop in a little bigger village called Odense, which was actually cool. It was cool because you got a lot of experience when it's not too fancy. And then I took my whole education there. You get really a lot of experience because you can cut clients' hair from an early stage of your career. You know what I mean?
Mm. From Tasmania, Mary Ann. It was much the same thing.
Yeah. They trust you, you know. So I find that it's good to start in a smaller place. And then from there, I went to Copenhagen as I was a stylist educated assistant. In Denmark, our education takes 4 years. I think that depends on where you come from. Mm-hmm. What is it in Australia?
Oh, it was 3 or 4 years when I did it, but they are shortening it all around the world now, I think, which is a bit sad, actually. But
it is a bit sad, yeah. And in Denmark, we are educated as men and women's hairdressers. We do, like, colouring and everything, styling, perming, everything throughout our education. Mm. But, I mean, lately I kind of preferred doing styling and haircutting, like the last 20 years, you know, after
that.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the beginning for listeners, Mary Ann, because, you know, you're such an icon of the industry. So did I hear a rumor that you had your own salon at one point when you were quite young?
Yeah, I did, yeah. But first I went to a bigger place in Copenhagen called Gunnbrit, and I met her at the Vidal Sassoon in London on a course, and she kind of reached out for me, and she's a mouthful, but then you go there because she's really good, and then you stay there as long as you can stand her temper, you know, kind of thing. But it's a good learning process. And I was there for 3 years, and I was actually really happy there. I think I'm an easy, I get along with most people. So that was good. And then I opened my own hairdresser's salon when I was 22 in Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really funny because back then I already knew Peter McDonald. He was he had another company called Joico, which isn't that Australian as well or American or do you know?
It's American. It's actually American, and Peter McDonald is the chairman of our Kevin Murphy board for listeners, for people that don't actually know.
Yeah.
And he's a bit of a he's a scallywag. That's one thing I could say.
Yeah, he is.
He's a visionary. He's a very forward-thinking man that actually is very much a part of the Kevin Murphy story. Yeah. Don't give away everything straight away, Marianne. We're going to get there. We're going to get there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've moved to Denmark. You had a salon. So what was the move into editorial? I mean, what was that like? What was the decision behind that? And how were you introduced to that world?
When I was at Gunbridge already, I met a photographer, a very famous Danish photographer that I start working with. And it was a little difficult because we were so busy. And as you know, you have to be flexible if you want to do like nice editorials, then the right team. Sometimes, you know, you try to make dates for it, but then it moves around and, you know, and then I went for my own hairdresser salon to get more freedom. And then that didn't really happen because we were so busy with clients. So then I had to make up my mind if I wanted to go for the styling thing or if I wanted to stay in the salon. And when I had my own salon, I already did some ill shoots, some, you know, campaigns and stuff like that. But then it would be over the weekend or, you know, with people that would plan it for the weekend to have me on the team. So it was a little... You feel a little bit, you try to be in both worlds, and I think it's really difficult to connect it, especially with clients that that pays a fortune and to come and get their hair done, you know, and then you move them around. It is really difficult to combine, I think. And then I sold my hairdresser's shop, and then I moved to New York, actually, for 3 years and stayed there until I was expecting my first girl, Carla.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
So you decided that you would spread your editorial wings, so to speak, and go to North America and work in New York. What was that like?
Oh, at that time, it was wonderful. New York was such a, you know, it was 98, 99, 2000, around that period. And it was just like there was so much money. So I started assisting really good hairdressers, and just assisting gave like $500 a day. You know,
yeah.
It was like I did a Bacardi campaign, the rum campaign, up in Harlem, and you know it was just like they closed like four streets. It was like we did like a James Bond movie. There was so much money. There was so much. It was really.
New York. It was at the peak in the 90s. It was.
Yeah, it was.
That's really amazing.
It was, and I got a really nice agency after a couple of years, like a year after, I think, and then stayed there with them for a couple of years, and yeah, I was actually really happy there. And at that time, I also went into a contract with Bumble and Bumble, which was at that time also a really, really cool brand. And just, you know, they did really treat like their freelancers and stylists really well. And, you know, you could get something in a magazine and they could go to their office and get like paid for the editorial and stuff like that. They were treating people really nicely. So it
was like, take your tear sheets in.
Exactly. But that was a way also of building up. There was their philosophy, you know, building up the brand in fashion, which was this guy, Michael Gordon, and he was really smart at that, you know. So I think he saw something pretty clear, and it was back in the 90s when he started that thing, you know. So it's a good advertising thing, you know.
Yes, I agree. I mean, it was very much like that. I used to get paid per mention in magazines here in Sydney, probably about that time or a bit more. That was just what you did. That was how the industry. But I also used to walk around with a book that you couldn't carry.
Yeah, I know.
We had to spend a fortune and get the right book from New York, so your photos
I looked at it, and go and do a look-see or a desk side, or whatever it was called. I don't know. It's so crazy. Yeah, I know. I totally remember that, you know, the portfolio, we called it. Yeah, bring your portfolio. Yeah, yeah. So we brought our portfolio.
Oh, I forget that brand we had to have from New York. It was all the same black folder. And, you know, we used to, like, wear gloves to change the photos.
So you didn't get, you know, any fingers on the plastic marks there. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Oh, dear, it sounds like we're winding up a gramophone.
I know. Exactly. I know. I love it. No, but, yeah. And then the problem was when some agency would like to keep it for another client. And then you had the next meeting, and then you have to buy a new one, which cost a fortune as well. I think at one time I had three, you know, because otherwise you couldn't leave them there, you know, But it was the,
We're going off on a tangent, but I love it. Now, you know the biggest tangent for me about those times, and this is something Kevin and I laugh about all the time, is the fact that we used to get everything done, get the model on set, and then we would take a Polaroid and then we'd shake the Polaroid.
I know.
And then we'd all stand around and look at the Polaroid and say, how's the test? how's the hair and makeup?
I know. It's so funny, isn't it? It's so funny. And then the client wants to get that and it never happens, you know?
Yeah, it never happens. That's right.
It's so funny. Yeah, I know. But I know somehow I find it a little, you know, I still really like the whole film thing, I must say.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing. I think the digital takes a little bit of, I don't know, some layers out.
I think so. I think there's something lo-fi about film, but I think to be commercial, obviously, it's all digital nowadays. I mean, that's just how it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Nobody shoots on film, no. But it's
true.
But when they do, it's actually pretty fascinating and you get a little nostalgic.
I agree.
Yeah, I did a beautiful campaign with Testino and Kate Moss for Burberry just before, actually when I was pregnant with my daughter, just before I actually left New York. And he shot on this beautiful camera, Pentax 6-7, we call it. And I think every film has around like 12 pictures or something like that. And I remember he did two films on each set with Kate Moss, which means like they had at the end 24 pictures to choose from because he just looked good on every single one of them. You know,
see, that's just amazing, isn't it? Because it had to when it was on film. I mean, it actually had to, Marianne. There was no really
exactly.
There was no mucking around and doing 100 shots.
No. But I was also, when I saw her working, I was so amazed. You know, in those 12 pictures, you just had everything. You know, she was just on from the second he turned his camera, you know, or towards her, you know, and it was so fascinating. You know, when you see these really super models working, you know why they are the supers, you know. I still feel the same when I work with Helena Christensen. I mean, now she's 51 or 52. She would hate me for saying this, but I still feel like, you know, when I'm standing there watching her, she's so gracious. It's like unbelievable how beautiful she looks when she moves around in front of that camera. And then you know, it's just, there's just somebody that is out of another league in that business.
And I think you raise a very valid point, though, and that is when you're on, you're on.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're actually on when you're on set.
Exactly.
Aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's something that, like, you know, I certainly don't lay claim to be anywhere near your standard. But that's something when we shoot campaigns and things like that. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can tell the models that are like, and the ones that are actually, they walk on set, they capture everyone's attention and they move and they know what to do. That's what you're paying for.
Exactly.
And that's the job.
Exactly. And somebody, yeah. I mean, I think the more kind of, you know, the people that are not on or models that are not, they would never survive. You know, they would be maybe because they have a certain look that is maybe fashionable in a certain time, then they would, would maybe work for 6-8 months. But if you don't give in and you don't focus and you don't look after yourself and, you know, then you will never last because it's such a tough business. It's a really tough business. To be a model. And I think whenever you meet the really good ones, you also are kind of like, you know, if you, if then you are pretty amazed. They can, they're like actresses, you know, they're like eating the camera. I remember also I did a perfume campaign with Justin Bieber a couple of years ago. And he's really short. He's really short, you know. He's like nearly my height. Yeah, it's so funny. I don't know. I think he looks bigger. I don't know. But when I saw him, I was just like, fuck, he's really short. And of course, also, he could be my son, you know. And I kind of like the last couple of years or when he grew older, I really liked his music. But when he was like younger, I didn't really fancy it, you know. Yeah. And then when he was like, he was playing on the piano in front of the camera when we were shooting this film. And I was just, you know, standing there and I took myself staring at him, you know. And then this production man, he's standing next to me and he's like, oh, Marianne, you're really fascinated. Could you? He's like, you know, trying. And I was just like, no, never. I could do anything with him. He could be my son. But I was just like, I was so fascinated by the way he was like sitting there so naturally with that piano, with his finger playing, singing without any microphone. And then you're just like, he's like an extremely talented person. He's gifted, you know, in the way that you, that it's so unreal. And I was just like, this is actually what he can do. It's not because some people, they would be like, oh, it's just because he got so many followers or this and that. But there is a reason why some people get really famous.
And they get the cult. Yeah, that's right. It's not the cult of celebrity necessarily because people like him or Helena, I mean, they actually deserve that, don't they?
I think so. Yeah, I think so too. And it's also really funny with the people that are really good at what they're doing. They're the easiest ones, you know. They're the easiest to get around, you know. They're like, and the people that are not good at what they're doing, they're the, you know, they always behave really weird, you know. It's so funny.
Oh, yeah. I don't disagree with that. I really don't disagree with that, Marianne.
It's interesting, I find. It is really interesting. Yeah. But
that's true. So I want to backpedal. So we're in New York. You know, you've already dropped that you were shooting with Mario and Kate Moss. Now, how does a girl from an island in Denmark, I imagine you're what, 25 by this point, 26, is that right? Or you're a little older?
At that time it was just before I got pregnant, 28.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So moving to New York, you knew you were in with a chance because you had you'd done so well in Denmark up until that point. Or were you just taking a huge chance on yourself?
I think it's always a chance, you know. In the beginning, it's an expensive city to live in. I spent the money I sold the shop for, and I think also I released my pension at that time. You know, but I don't know. I think it's like an investment, you know, to start and try to make it there. It's an investment. Yeah. So the first year, I think I spent a lot of money just to be there. You know, we lived in a really beautiful little loft at 49 Bleecker Street, which is a beautiful street and a beautiful area. And it cost $2,000 a month or something like that.
And back then, wow.
Back then, yeah, but it was just, and we ate out, you know, three times a day, you know, it was, but it was, I think it was, I would never have been without those years and that experience. And the joke in New York, it was like, I was assisting this guy and Eugene Sølmann. And we went down
yes.
on the street for like a lunch break. And I was just like, when we went down for that, you know, just to get some fresh air or whatever, we're standing there and I was like, yeah, so we're standing here hanging. And it's like, yeah, we should never have left the studio. Somebody else would get our job if we stay out too long, you know. And he's so, yeah, and he's so, you know, he's like one of the biggest names in the industry. And I was like, nobody would take your job. They would plan it for you, I said to him or something like that. And he's just kidding. He has, he's from UK. He has this British sense of humor, but it's some, yes. there is a little truth in it. You know, the competition there is pretty crazy, but I think coming from Denmark, being assisting the great guys, being accountable. I assisted a guy, I can't say his name, but really drugged up dude that was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, his agent would call him up in the morning and would be like, oh, are you okay? Are we on time? Are we sure that you're going to show up and stuff like that? And I would be there on time and open up his bags and everything, you know. And then he would pop in as a rock star, you know, and sometime totally stoned and, you know, whatever. But it's just like back then, I think just to be reliable was a good thing, you know. Because the hairstylists at that, they earned a fortune, you know, those people. I mean, in that league, they still do. So they were like rock stars, you know. I remember.
Yeah. It's true, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I remember another job we did for, you know, the big mall, Saks.
Yes.
With Naomi Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And she was supposed to come to the studio at 9:30. And she came in at 2 o'clock. And at 4 o'clock, she's like, yeah, and now we're going on overtime, she said, you know. And she was 5 hours late. And we were just standing there staring because people are actually, in New York, they've been doing campaigns for a decade or more than two decades or three decades. But they are actually not working overtime from 5 o'clock. We would go on overtime for editorials and stuff like that, you know, but we would never do it with campaigns because the renting studios were so expensive, the models were so expensive and stuff like that. So it was so rude when she said that she was 5 hours late and then she would still be asking for overpayment, you know, after 4 o'clock, which would normally be 5 o'clock, you know. So it was just like, shit, you know. At that time, she was crazy.
It was that build up to the millennium and everything Gen Zs and for the millennials listening. It was actually quite a time. It was ostentatious. It was over the top, but it was also we played hard. We worked very hard.
Yeah, we worked all the time.
All the time. No distinction. I actually did shoot with Naomi. It's not many people know this. And the reason not many people know it is because her management was so full on that they never released the pictures. There you go. Because, let's just say Naomi's very fussy about what her hair looks like. And they didn't actually deem it to look like Naomi. And it's no, you weren't hired to do that. Yeah. But anyway, that's another matter.
That's so funny. When I did that sex thing with her, it was totally straight, you know, extensions that we straightened. There was a lot of straightened hair back then.
Yes.
But we were busy with that flat iron.
With those Muster irons, the big flat, the big, big square ones. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, we were really busy with that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you in New York in that time, so what was it like shooting with Mario Testino? What was that like?
He was a sweetheart. I was also safe, you know. He was in for the young boys, not me, you know. No, I really liked him. I must say, I really liked him. And I think, you know, all this whole situation with the SoMe globally is, of course, crazy. And I think that we all needed to treat each other as good as we can. And some has taken some benefits that they shouldn't. But
yes.
You know, another person that was on that campaign was Stella Tennant. And she's not with us anymore, which is really sad. She died last year. I don't know if you remember.
Utter icon of my childhood, Stella Tennant. Emma Balfour, who's a neighbour here in Sydney. Exactly. Around that time.
And at that time when we shot this campaign, she brought her baby to the set and she was sitting breastfeeding the baby, which is to just sit and breastfeed in a studio in New York is pretty. And Testino was just, you know, of course, she's breastfeeding. And then we take the picture when the baby's full and happy, you know, which is kind of for a Burberry campaign that, you know, they spent like millions of dollars on, you know, it's just...
Yeah.
It was cool. It was a lovely environment. I I really liked Testino, but I can see why he's in problems now. But he was really
There was a lot in the industry that did need to come to account because we all turned, like in a way. I mean, we all turned a blind eye to certain behaviours that we just thought were part of the industry because the people that mentored us when we were young. Taught us that that was kind of normal. And it kind of isn't, you know.
Of course it's not normal and it shouldn't be normal. Yeah. And we all, I think there's a lot of behaviors now that is changing because the whole attention towards the social Me Too thing is so incredible. Yeah. And everything is recorded and you email to people, you know, you can actually find evidence for everything, which is, I think, in so many ways really good and in some ways a little tough, but it's of course for Me Too it's good, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we don't want to go into the dark side of the industry too much. You're in New York at this time, and so you got pregnant and you decided to return to Denmark. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I mean, the first thought that catched me was like, okay, maybe I should just move back to Ærø, the little island where I'm from. And, you know, and my husband, he looked at me and he's like, no, never. We're not moving from New York to Ærø, which would be the biggest contrast. You know, and he was like, never. And then I was just like, okay, but at least Copenhagen. And because I don't know, I find when I felt I was carrying a child, I felt that I wanted to be closer to my mom. I spend a lot of time trying to grow up and saying bye to my family. I think that's a way of being an adult, you know, growing up and find your own way. And then when I felt that, you know, when I was going to be a mom, I wanted to be nearby my own mother, you know. It felt so right. And it ended out that the timing, being a mother in Copenhagen with my family around me and, you know, I came home and, you know, there was a photographer I worked quite a lot with in New York that is actually, he's Danish, and he was here quite a lot at that time, and I was still working with the baby. We were shooting, breastfeeding at shoots and stuff, you know. It was good to be in Copenhagen. So then I stayed, you know. It was I think, you know, I don't know, but being a mother, Denmark is pretty special. It is like for kids to grow up in Denmark, it's there's a lot of freedom here. It's like I can't imagine a better place. So I'm actually really happy that it came out like this. But at the first couple of years when the kids were small, I was back in New York every 4 months, where I did like Fashion Week in New York, and I did like editorials, and I did education for Bumble and Bumble. So it was also a mild way of saying goodbye to New York and Manhattan. Do you know what I mean? Because there was always something to look forward to. It was like having a good base in Denmark and then still be able to go back. And then after 3 years, Ella came, and then it was a little bit more difficult to go back and work with, you know, a family on fourth people, you know, instead of just having a baby on the side. So, so it was... So that changed a little bit, but I haven't regret any of those years, and I haven't regret that I decided to stay in Denmark to build up my family here. I think that was perfect, actually.
No, I feel the same way about Australia. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think at certain time things make sense. I was away for many years living in Europe and returned home from not the same. I wasn't actually pregnant at that stage, but, you know, I returned home for much the same reasons, to have that sense of home. Yeah. So, Mary-Ann, when and how did you start with Kevin Murphy?
Oh, yeah, that's such a good story.
This is going to be a story, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I knew Peter. It was Peter that reached out for me and Marcus Westling. And that was back in 2010, 11. Can that be?
That would be right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they reached out for me and they were like, you have to come to Kevin Murphy and I'm sure you would love the products and blah, blah. And then we went a little back and forward because at that time I had a really good contract with Bumble and Bumble. And it was a new thing for the whole Kevin Murphy thing to...
I mean, who'd ever heard of a product called Easy Rider or...
Exactly. And
I mean...
True. And at that time I said, you know, I'm doing fashion week and stuff for Bumble and Bumble. So it also means that if you're going to take me on board, we should put some money there and show our names there and stuff like that. And then we went a little back and forward. And then I remember I put on my signature with Marcus at a hotel in Kastrup, you know, where the planes are landing. Mm-hmm. In our airport here in Copenhagen, we're sitting there at this Hilton hotel and I'm signing, and it felt so good because it felt like I somehow came home. I've known Peter and Marcus since I was 22. So it's just like, this is going to be a good, it felt really good. And then the first big thing I did was the White Box in Stockholm.
Yeah.
And before that, I'd done some smaller things. And then that was the first time I met Kevin. And I think it was about in 2012, a little year after. And of course, I said at that time, I knew the products and I was absolutely in love with the line. And the funny thing was, like, back in the day when I was styling, I was kind of like having different products from different lines. I would have maybe one hairspray from one brand and another oil from another brand and, you know, shit like that. It was all a mixture. And I just looked at Kevin and I said to him, you know what, you did a line that I would have done it the same way. I said, you know, you fulfill, you know, but he does. He totally fulfill your needs, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, I feel, you know, that the whole line, there's nothing else I need. I'm covered, you know, with his products. I love the texture. I love the smell. I love the whole philosophy about the environment, of course, but it's just, yeah, I fell in love with the products. And then I met Kevin and I remember it was in Stockholm and back to the portfolio again. I brought my book because it was the first time I was supposed to do a show for him. And I was just like, maybe he doesn't know my hair or my style or, you know. So I brought my book and I brought some stuff and I said to him, yeah, is there anything you want me to show on stage or whatever? And then he sits there, this really, really nice man. And I was pretty nervous. I was totally nervous. And I remember I did like a tight French double twist on an updo on one of the models, and
which is a Jensen classic, an MJ classic, but yes.
yeah, but at that time, and he's looking at it, and he's like, and then it's so funny, he's like, I would love you to do this one, because I can't do that one. And it was just, you know, that was the first, you know, I don't know if it was the first thing he said to me, but he was just like, he made me feel so good. You know, I was sitting there being nervous and just the kindness of saying that you've actually done a hairdo there that I might not be able to do. And I'm sure he would be able to do it, but just the way he said it was so nice, you know. So I felt really good in, and I feel really good in Kevin's company. And I...
He is a very kind man. He's a very kind man.
He is a very kind man, but he's also a very open-minded man. And I think that is why I fit very well into the whole Kevin Murphy family, because he allows me to be myself with my own creativity, my own ideas. And the first time I did braids, he was like, oh, my God, I hate braids. And then he's like, oh.
Yeah.
But then I saw your braids, and then I love braids.
And we love them. Yeah.
But, you know, when I first started it, he was just like, oh, shit, we hate braids, you know. And I was just like, oh, yeah. But that's just what I mean. In the first hand, he would be, he's so honest, and I love that as well.
Mm.
And, I mean, also his humor, his sarcasm, in you know, that I really, really appreciate and really love. But I think he's easy to be around, and it's so inspiring for me to do a show with you guys, because you come in with your ideas, Nathan. I come in with mine, and Kevin comes in, and he has this overview of everything, but he still allows us to
be ourselves, yeah.
To be ourselves, but also to add on to his ideas. He's not afraid if I said, oh, I looked at your mood board and I think we could twist it and make it a little bit in this way. He would be like, oh, yeah, please do, you know. And I think that is, yeah. And I think that is why I feel also you develop your creativity much better in those surroundings and in that environment of working together. Instead of, you know, if he was saying, you have to do this and that for me, you know, then no new ideas would come up. But in this way, we actually develop new ideas all the time.
That's right. I mean, my previous creative director used to, like, lead by fear, and he would come around and you'd be doing something and he'd be like, oh, what are you doing there? Oh, and it was a bit like, actually, and now I actually know it was all garbage, because it actually looks like an episode of MasterChef when the judges come around and say, oh, are you making the right decisions there with that dish? It's actually
exactly.
I can't say bullshit on a podcast, can I? I don't know. It'll get edited out if I can't.
You can. Yeah.
But Kevin's very much not like that. Kevin actually wants everything to be enhanced and throws ideas in and doesn't get involved when he thinks, you know, he lets you dream. And if you always try and hit the mark, if you try, if that's your obsession professionally, you'll never go beyond that mark.
No, exactly.
You can't try and hit a mark, because
that's so
all you'll ever do. You'll just hit that mark.
Yeah.
And that's it. You'll never go beyond it. And I think that's one of the most important things.
It is. And I think just the feeling that he plants in you, that you are allowed to share ideas, and he's open-minded and actually is grateful about it. That whole thing makes you more creative. You know, it makes you aim higher. It makes you want to try more. And, you know, so I think that at the end of the day, everybody grew together and get much more out of everything while sharing those kind of ideas and being playful. And also to mention that whenever we do a big show, we always have a couple of days playing around with the looks. That if I go to Las Vegas, I know that I would go for a certain thing on stage, but then when I get there, I have, you know, 1 or 2 days to play around with that, to make it even more stronger, you know what I mean? And or more editorial, or, you know, and I think that is the thing that makes the difference, that you have the time to be creative. And he pays us for that, and he allows us to spend time doing that, you know. That is magnificent, I think, for me.
That's
it is.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's not a brand on earth doing big shows like Future Love, like we did in Prague and Las Vegas. And we're actually doing Fast Forward next year in Berlin.
Yeah, I know. Can't wait.
I can't wait for that day for us all to be together.
Mm.
What happened to your career during COVID? I mean, I don't want to dwell on it, though. I want to move on because it's summer in Europe. And trust me, from Australia, if I tell you once you get a summer under your belt, you feel much better about everything, you do.
But I must say that then the Danish fashion business, they suddenly realized everybody was home. And they also realized I was home. So, you know, some of the best photographers that lives here in Copenhagen that also works abroad, that does like, you know, beautiful stuff for Vogue and Elle and throughout whole Europe, everybody was here, you know, in this time. So suddenly I got maybe the most beautiful editorials out of this period than for the last 10 years, to be honest. I mean, I did Italian Vogue. I did, you know, so many things that I was kind of like. And the thing is also, I had the time to plan those looks much better than I had before because I actually had the time.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. So I know Kevin feels the same way as well, to tell you the truth. We all feel the same way.
Yeah, so the looks I created in this period, I really like. You know, I'm so happy with them. And new techniques came up and I feel my head has been spinning in a more productive, creative way than for a long time because it's there's nothing on what you call it, autopilot. Like there's nothing where you just do it because you know this works because you have the time to think it a little over. And so I think in so many ways, it's been really beautiful for me. And to be honest, I mean, the girls, they like that I'm around a bit more, you know, which is also, you know, I've been traveling quite a lot, you know, and now I've been home for more than a year, and they're like, oh, it's actually nice you're around all the time, Mom, you know, you know.
Yeah. I'm a bit like that, but I am ready to travel as well again. I'm actually ready.
Yeah. So am I. And I think we should. And I miss, you know, I miss you and I miss your sense of humor. I miss Pat, you know, I miss her sense of humor. I miss our international connection, you know.
Yeah.
It's so, it's really interesting how you miss people just having the creative conversation we have, but we're also very personal among each other. You know, my family, I know yours, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think there's a lot of love and a lot of build-up between us that the Danish culture and is a little bit more flat, I would say. It's not that that we don't have humor, but it's a little bit more like, we are not as cheerful as is, as we would be at the Kim and Murphy family. You know, we cheer each other in a really beautiful way. I love that, you know, but it's a little bit, in Denmark, it's a little bit more like you shouldn't show off too much, you know, that's more the mentality here, you know, which is also cool, but I miss our energy among each other. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
It is very special.
I can't wait. I mean, for listeners, we do have shows coming back. We will be doing shows again. Yeah. Right. I want to shift gears though. No more COVID. No more COVID. Let's move on.
Done.
Tell me about Helena Christensen. I actually am obsessed with her. I'm obsessed with, do you know anything about the Lindbergh shots and that time? I just, oh my God.
You know what they did? They did the hair and makeup the day before, went partying, and then they started the day after.
Oh, that sounds perfect. That sounds like the '90s, doesn't it?
Isn't it just, if you look at the pictures, you can tell that was what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
She told me he's a, I never worked with him myself, but she told me that he's a beauty, he was a, he's not here anymore. He was a beautiful person and they did absolutely stunning stories together. I don't, but I've, you probably remember most of them, but there is so many. They shot also a lot of stories in the desert. And yeah, he was just magnificent with lighting and he was so, he was a sweet man and he was, she's telling about him like he was just, you know, so easy to work with and kind to everyone and Yeah. So, but the story with the look and the hair was like lots of products in the hair. And also the thing that they used a lot of gel, you know, stiff products, as you can see. And then they just, liner, you know, they did the smoky eyes that was a little, you know, smashed out. And then shot it the day after, went partying and then shot it the day after, just as it was.
That's really raw. Don't tell James Nicholson that. Oh, my God. Amazing.
I know. I know. But Helena, we're joking about it. We have a silver wedding together. I've done her hair for more than 25 years and I love her.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a beautiful person inside out. I can't say anything bad about her. She's a sweetheart and she has really gorgeous hair and she's very brave with her hair. We done, you know, then we do like a long bob and then we let it grow and then we do a short fringe and then she's like, oh, I feel a little old today. Make that hair, that fringe a little shorter so I look a little younger, a little bit more naive. She's like, so she's not afraid of having a short fringe at all. No,
She understands the power of good hair.
She does.
She understands.
Yeah, she does. And she's also very loyal. I mean, if there's people she likes to work with, she would always ask for me for her hair. You know, she's always like that. Yeah. You know, a client would call me up and they're like, "Oh, we're doing this campaign with Helena. She asked specific for you to do her hair and stuff like that."
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if that's the old school thing or whatever, but she's very loyal. She's
no, I think that's manners. I think that actually what you said before about. Yeah. People that walk on set or people that know their job, it's actually at a point where, they don't have to pretend. They can ask those questions and it's a more lo-fi way of living life, I understand, than the fast digital-paced world we're in.
But I
think that, you know, you don't want to be a celebrity stylist that does it for likes.
Not at all. No, but then she's also having this really beautiful, crazy humor. So I had a thing where I asked her to send some words about me for something for Kevin or I can't remember, something where they wanted, you know, a saying from her about me doing hair or whatever. And then she sent this really beautiful text that is I was nearly crying. It was like really, really, really nice words about me as a hairdresser, as a person and so on. And I was just like, and I texted her back and I was just like, oh my God, that's really sweet of you. You didn't have to. And it was a long, you know, I was maybe expecting maybe two sentences or so, but it was like a long little, you know, script and it was beautiful. And then I said, no, that's so kind. I'm sitting here nearly crying, I said. And then she's like, yeah, you know what? I had to lie a bit.
Well, there you are. She's got the Australian sense of humour like us, you do as well.
I know. And I just love it, you know. I was sitting there being totally sensitive, sensible. Mm. And then she's like, yeah, you know what? I had to lie a bit, you know. Yeah, but she's a beautiful person and I love working with her And she, I also done a lot of pictures with her where she's been the photographer and she has this beautiful taste and her eye is just incredible, you know. Mm. And it's also funny, you know, if we're doing a selfie together, she's like, oh no, Marianne, don't smile too much. You know, you get all wrinkles around your eyes and stuff like that. She would be saying stuff like that to me. And then she would put it into her little iPhone and she'll be like, oh, I'm just going to retouch you a little bit because I'm retouching myself. So just so you look good next to me. And of course, I'm never going to look as good as her, but it's just, you know, it's just cute, you know. She's, and then she's also, it's funny, we did a big thing for like, a campaign for like, shades and glasses and, you know, with all these beautiful shades like Gucci's and Dior's, and, you know, they were carrying a lot of really good brands. And then they come in and they wanted to give her some gifts, you know, they always do that. And then she's like, oh, yeah, but you know what, this one would really suit Marianne, she would say, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's so cute, you know. She would always, you know, whatever she gets something, she's a sharing person. She would be like, maybe she get like 4 or 5 glasses of, you know, shades or whatever, you know, pairs, you know. Then she would be like, you know, she would make sure that at least I get 1 or 2, you know. She's just like, yeah, she's a really nice person. And if we do like a clothing brand or whatever, and they're like, oh, would you order some clothes, or is there anything you want? And then she'll be like, oh, but that dress, that will really suit Marianne. I think you should give it to her, you know, stuff like that, she would say. Mm. That's, yeah, she's a sweetheart. Oh,
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love her. I'm obsessed with her. Yeah. So, Marianne, what's the best skill an editorial artist can hold? I think we've answered it already, to tell you the truth.
What is that? What is the answer then?
Well, it's going to be communication and personal skills, isn't it? It's going to be being yourself. It's going to be being open to change.
Yeah. You know, I think what I've learned over the years is also with the communication. I think for me, if you are a person with your head full of ideas, I mean, I have my head full of ideas before I enter the set. So for me, I think what I've learned is that over the years, I'm getting better at listening. I'm so talkative, as you also can hear here. So I could talk an idea into the client, you know, before they even show a mood board sometimes. Yes. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, being a member of a team with really good people around you, and you listen to them, and then you, sometimes the hair would be a show off, and sometimes it would be a little simple thing, but actually lifting each other is where I find the most beautiful pictures are getting made. I mean, the one I did for Italian Vogue, I did with a floral artist, and the way she works with, but the way she works with flower, I was just like, I need to create a narrow shape on the head for her to build onto. And then I said, we could do some braids that goes around the ears, and we could do a little crown and some that could go down, hanging down underneath the flowers. I said, and she was just like, you know, I love that thing, because also you could actually just put one flowers in on top of that, or you could build it really high as she did. But just, I think when I was younger, I had, I wanted to show off more or something. And I think...
You know what it is? It's like you can see it, and it's obviously, it's a little bit like competition hair in the hairdressing industry. It's where people put too many ideas into one hairdo.
I know, yeah.
Because they want to show they've got all those ideas, and it's...
So true. Yeah. And I think I'm over the years, I'm a little bit more relaxed. And I it's also maybe because I work with these people that are so talented. You know, when you work with people that you really either look up to or you adore their work before, you know, even work with them or whatever, it's just like you want you want to be a part of it, but you don't want to overtake anything. Or, and I find that's the secret to actually make really beautiful pictures. It's actually to make room for each other. So listening for me is my, not my new thing, but a thing that I definitely would say that I try to listen to people and then put in my own ideas and say, if this is the way we're going, how can I add on to that? And I must say, I love when you add on to it. I like when I've done a picture and people would say, oh, I just knew you did that one, Marianne.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think there's a definite mark of a Marianne Jensen hairdo.
I love that. I love when people can recognize my work without, you know, without my name on it. That's for me, that's that's satisfying. I must say that. Yeah. So that's a, that's a thing that is, yeah, it's good. Life is good, Nathan. I can't, you know. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So what do you think? Like, I know it seems like kind of arbitrary or a bit weird to ask now, like, what, like, we've been through all of this COVID with blah, blah, blah. I mean, Marianne, I don't really see any clear fashion trends at the moment. I see everything and it's wonderful and I love it.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think about trends? What do you think is coming through?
Yeah, I mean, just look at my kids, you know. It's definitely the 90s are coming back.
Mm.
It's really funny, you know. It's really funny.
Here we are again.
Here we are
in our prime.
And I'm actually, I'm doing a job for a beautiful magazine called Dansk here in the beginning of June.
Yes, I love that. Yeah,
yeah, it's really cool. And the whole theme for that is a modern version of the 90s. So I think that the it's going to be really inspiring to try and make those looks that you and me remember really well, and we remember how we did them. But then again, I think to make them more present is really it's really interesting. And I think the colors are back. I think the combination of like contrast colors, but done in a much more beautiful way than we did in the 90s. And I think also the shorts or fringes, I want to play around with that. But again, trying to make it more beautiful, more organic, with less.
Have you, I mean, Marianne, have you heard of the, like, you know, everyone on TikTok, you know, up with the kids on TikTok, it's all about a wolf cut right now, a wolf cut. That's a cut. Yes, a wolf cut is like a modern mullet long hair, but it's actually what you and I would just call a beautiful haircut for long hair because it's kind of, it's about freeing up individual pieces of the hair to flow. And so it goes from short to long kind of seamlessly, but with visibility. You're not hiding the short, you're not hiding the, and that's, you know, that's, I think, it's something that I is completely in your wheelhouse and something that I've always admired.
Yeah.
But you are an editorial cutter and that is amazing. That's one of your biggest skill sets, I think.
Yeah, that's the that's the thing. And when hairdressers or people are asking me to do like an editorial's haircut or do a model's haircut, I think to break it up in the ends, that's the key word, you know, even the ends, there's no like blonde areas or like solid outlines, or it has to be movable and balanced all the time. And texture, I think we talked a lot about texture for a period now, but I still think that texture is really the way that you work with their own texture of models' hair these days, and you create haircuts that fits their own texture, is really inspiring. And it goes from like low texture to really extremely highly texture, where the girls with extreme texture, they are actually playing with that instead of relaxing it, which I think is so inspiring. And
It is. It's just not, we don't all have to be the same and have the same fashion. And that's why even asking you about trends, it's a bit, we are looking at the world through a 90s lens. I mean, for me, it's when the 70s came back in the 90s. I love that period.
Exactly,
Do you remember that?
Yeah, Chloe, did that very well. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I really like it. And I think we can do it in a really beautiful way. And I'm, you know, what I was even more, you know, even a perm, you know, I was like, maybe we should perm some dudes, you know.
I love how you whispered that, even a perm.
You know, because that's a thing, you know, with the chemicals and stuff, you know, I was just like, it could be really cool, you know, to even, you know, there is this whole new generation that never explored it, that having textured hair like that. I think it could be really cool. So
I think so. Yeah.
So I think that there is and definitely also stronger colors like we did in the 90s with the crazy colors. Mm. in another way, you know, maybe placed in some highlights where, you know, you saw my own daughter where she has like a triangle in the front that is completely white. And then she had some low lights with white bits underneath in the sides. She wanted three in each side. So when she puts it back in a pony, you have like three lines showing in the sides. She would use, you know, purple one day, pink another day, and blue, you know, whatever fits her mood. And I think that generation is really playful. And to me, I think that it's so beautiful to see that they are more playful than, you know, it's been a scene where you've seen long, long hair for a long time, where it's all the same line and, you know, just like fake lashes and all about being sexy, you know, kind of that certain look where I think, you know, the new generation, they're so brave and they are, and it's really inspiring how playful they are with the way they look. It seems like they're not that concerned about if it looks really good or not. You know, it's a little bit like homeless person meets couture. You know,
yeah, that's right. Well, it's street. It's absolute street. I loved Billie Eilish's raw bleach. I'm obsessed with raw bleaches at the moment, so which is what we did in the 90s.
Exactly.
I love a raw buttery bleach.
Yeah, exactly.
And people in the salon are starting to. They want that. Yeah, that's what they want.
Yeah, I think that is totally the way to go. Yeah, I love it too, I must say.
Yeah. And for listeners, you actually need to do a beautiful bleach to leave it raw, by the way.
Yeah,
it's not just about doing a bleach. It has to be done flawlessly to not tone a bleach.
Yeah,
that's totally what I'm talking about.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But it's quite refreshing, I think, you know, with the young kids. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. You've always got to look down.
Yeah.
Do you need to look, you know, to the younger people and to see what's going on? And that's exactly, you know, that's how life works. We may have expertise and we may know how to use our hands or use our colour bowls or to actually help people achieve these sorts of looks. But it comes from the street, I truly believe.
Yeah.
Now, Marianne, as we come to a close, I want to ask, what do you see happening in your career over the next few years?
Ooh, la, la. Oh, that's always a difficult question, I think.
You're like me, you're just emotional. You just do what you feel at any time,
But
what do you plan?
I must say I'm very happy where I am right now. I think this last year I used my voice a little bit more. I did some charity work. That is a new thing for me, that we have these foundations where you put money in for like it's called I don't know what it's called in English actually, but it's like organizations that would help girls and women in Uganda getting a job or getting the thing is that we did a campaign where we got money in here in Copenhagen for this campaign so girls in Kampala in Uganda could start up their own hairdressing shop. And for 850 kroners, which is about 120 euros or something like that, you can open up your own salon in Kampala, which means that these girls is not going into trafficking. Or so I'm actually using my career, my name, my my personality as a hairstylist to another level. And we earned so much money that in just one day we could open up 215 salons in Kampala.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
And just to be aware of, you know, that you can't do that with your career. It just made my heart bleed, you know. It was just so touching that without sharing your hair skills, with these people and tell them what does it require to start up a salon. And I was just like, yeah, you need products for textured hair. At least you don't have to be aware of that. You know, we sit here in Denmark and everybody has Scandinavian hair, you know, but it's, but I think I would definitely be doing stuff like that because I think it makes so much sense for me to help where I can.
And it's not about, and that's the thing, it's actually like for listeners, it's actually okay to be okay with your career and love your career. You don't actually have to get into this mindset of more. Like,
that's actually because that is really an interesting question because this is without, I mean, when you do charity work, you don't earn any penny at all. But it gave me a lot, personal. Mm. I was just so happy, and I was just like, these people are so grateful, and it didn't take me much energy. But I just find that I'm at a stage now where also I would love to give stuff back to people. I've been in this business for more than 30 years, and I'm really happy where I am, and I'm really grateful. But I'm also at a stage where I'm not afraid of, you know, letting anybody taking over or letting anybody into my team or, you know, I've never been there. I always been trusting in myself, but I'm just like, I don't know. I think I feel really, maybe not on the highest level of my career, but I think I'm pretty close. I work with the people that I find really inspiring. I work with really good people and I'm so happy with the whole Kevin Murphy family. I can't wait for us together, get together again, you know. And I still feel I have so much to give, you know. It's and that's also funny due to the COVID. I thought it was really hard not to work.
Yeah.
You know, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
For me, I'm a working person, and I really like to creative and be creative and deliver looks and. And also being something for people, you know. I maybe that's the thing that I work with people that I really appreciate. And I think you can't really, you know, I don't know, maybe that's the highest goal. That's actually to work with
people. That is. That's the highest goal in life. I love that. I love that.
I think it's working with people you do respect and you like and, you know, you love being among, you know. I think that is.
And you laugh. And you laugh.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm pretty happy where I'm at. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
We laugh a lot, listeners. We laugh a lot, don't we, Marianne?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Now, this is a podcast about Kevin Murphy. So the one thing you haven't told me, and I kind of want to draw to a close on, is I want you to run through... I want you to list your favorite product and tell me why you love it and then move on to your next product.
Okay, let's start with the wet line. You know what? It's really funny. My favorite shampoo is Maxi Wash.
Yeah.
I love when my hair is extremely clean. And and to the people that don't know me, I always have color in my hair. So the color is that colors my hair. She hates that's my favorite product, but it is my favorite product. I love that shampoo. And after that, I would use either Hydrate, Me Wash and Rinse, or I would use Angel Wash and Rinse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love the Angel, I also love the mask because it's so light. I have quite okay hair, but every hair is quite fine. That's one thing. And then, my styling routine would be, I mean, my favorite product at all from the whole line is Anti-Gravity and Spray. If I should only pick one product, that would be the one I would take me, you know, forever. That's a phenomenal product. I love it. I use it from booth to end and I would add on and I would brush it out. And I just really adore that product. And I love the smell. The lavender is beautiful.
Beautiful.
And I love the hair resort and spray. I like the spray products. I think it's because when you do editorials, you don't want
to get your hands dirty.
Exactly. So I love that. You know, I like the do-over for a more, you know, worn-in look. When you style the hair, I love the do-over for a more worn-in look. And then I think for me, the spray, I mean, the session spray is for me a little too heavy, but the session spray Flex really fits my... it's an easy one, brush out, brush...
See, I just love session spray because I was like educated like a 1950s hairdresser I brush it and comb it and move it and it's so funny.
I love that one.
I understand.
And then, I mean, for grooming, one of my favorite products are the Easy Rider, and I love to heat it up in my hands and make it really oily and just really smooth it in. I love that one. I love that it feels really organic in my hands. That is
and for the, I love it.
Yeah, and for the high shine, I love Shimmer Me Blonde. I love the smell of that too, which is, these are just like...
I think you love all of them. Okay, this is like what's inside Mary Ann Jensen's editorial kit, listeners.
Yeah.
This is exactly what she's traveling with. This is... Well, Mary Ann, thank you so much for being here today on Conversations with Kevin. Is there anything you'd like to say as we draw to a close to listeners out there?
Oh, no, I just want to say thank you for having me, and to the people that are listening, thank you for being here with us. And I hope that we might have been a little inspiring, or maybe people got some ideas out of this conversation.
Yep. Mary Ann, you probably want to give a shout out to your socials so people who may be in North America and Asia Pacific that don't follow you, everyone in Europe follows you, but where can we find you?
My Instagram account is called Marianne Jensen Hair.
Jensen with a J for our English speakers.
J-E-N-S-E-N, Marianne Jensen Hair, So just my name.
Yeah.
And then hair, And if anybody has any questions or whatever, you can always find me there or text me there, and I'd be more than happy to answer.
Oh, thank you so much, Mary Ann, for being here today. Mary Ann Jensen, I'll get the verbiage right, is inspiration and an icon in the industry and a very valuable part of the Kevin Murphy family, and someone who's... He's been part of our family for a very long time. This has been a wonderful conversation with her today on Conversations with Kevin. Till next time, I'm Nathan Gorman, Headmaster. See you then. Bye.